Succession number 19599, real one.
Richard Hilda, real one. Where were you born, please?
In York.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did your parents come from York?
No, they came from Essex.
So, how did they come to be in York?
My father was stationed in York. His regiment was stationed in York.
He was a professional soldier?
Yes, he was in the 6th Inniskilling Dragoons.
Did you have your schooling and upbringing in York?
No. I came to live down in Essex when he retired. And I'm more or less Essex person.
Which place in Essex is really your home?
Yes.
Which place?
Well, near Ingatestone.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school in Kent, and then I went to Eton after that, and until I left just before the war.
Do you remember the year you left Eton?
Let's see, I think it must have been 1938.
What happened to you on leaving?
I was going to join the regular army and was preparing to go to Sandhurst, and they closed Sandhurst down, and so I then decided, or the powers that be, who I took advice from, decided it would be a good idea to take Certificate B, which would enable me to get a commission in the Territorial Army. But they then closed that down, and I was advised to join the ranks and get a commission that way. So that I prepared to do, but on going to the recruiting office, I discovered that I couldn't join the army till I was 23, which sounds rather ridiculous in the war. So that I then went and ran my father's farm, because he was called back on the reserve, which I did until my 19th birthday, when I joined the lifeguards.
Where was the farm?
In Essex, near Ingatestone.
What was the name of the village?
A place called Stock, very near Ingatestone. So, yes, I joined the lifeguards and served with them. We were mounted, and served with them Windsor and London.
Just before we go any further with the lifeguards, just going back to the farm, do I understand that you were running this farm?
Yes.
In 39-40?
As a boy, sort of thing, with my mother.
What kind of a farm was this?
It was a mixed farm of about 250 acres.
And so you were running it under early wartime conditions?
Yes.
Was the war having an effect on the farming at that
time?
Well,
yes, it was, because we had precious few tools, and I had to rustle around, because we were made to plough, you see. There was all grass, and I had to plough it up, which of course had no tools to do so. So I had to buy some horses to get into carts, heavy horses, and get some contractors to do the arable, which we had to grow wheat, you see, for the war effort. It was quite something. There was only me and an old pensioner who'd been in the 9th Lancers during the Boer War. He and I were struggling away.
You had to get contractors to grow the...
Ploughing contractors to plough the land and cultivate it for us. And then we harvested with a horse and cart and whoever we could manage to rustle up to help us.
Who were these contractors?
Well, they were agricultural contractors who had ploughs.
Local people?
Yes, local contractors.
Was that common in farming?
Well, yes, it still is today. Yes.
Did Did they do a good job for you?
Oh, yes, yes. Very good. Very much better than we would have done.
What kind of crops were you growing then?
Basically wheat. Nearly all had to be wheat.
Why had it traditionally been grass?
Because he was grazing cattle on it before the war. He used to let the grazing to a Scotsman who used to send cattle down, and then they were slaughtered and so on. I can't really remember the details of it. I was too young, you know, it's such a long time ago.
What was it really more suited to? To the grass and cattle? Or
well, it was suited to grass growing, a very good grass farm. But it then, after it was ploughed up, and it's even till this day, it grows very good corn, very good corn.
What was the soil?
It was very clay, very heavy clay soil, which was... But everybody had to grow wheat in those days.
Was it a fixed price for wheat?
Yes, it was a fixed price.
How did the farmers react to these instructions from government?
They had to do what they were told.
Did they grumble about
it? Yes. And if they didn't like it, they were dispossessed, and that was the end of that.
Did that actually happen?
Oh, yes. They threatened me with that because my mother and I weren't frankly efficient, as you can imagine. A boy of, 18 and his mother fiddling about.
In what way did they threaten you with dispossession?
Well, they thought we weren't very efficient.
You mean they sent a letter, a threatening letter to you?
Well, they came along. I think in those days, life was much tougher. And our neighbouring farmer, who had got an eye to it anyway, came along, and he was actually on the War Agricultural Committee, and he used to come and make threatening noises, and if we didn't do this, he'd have it, you know. It wasn't like this today.
What did you say to him?
Told him to get stuffed. That didn't go down well either.
What was the name of your farm?
White's Tyrrell. White's Tyrrell.
And was it all more or less flat land?
Yes, flattish land, yes, yes. Good farming land.
And who was this pensioner who was helping?
This was an old man who had been a sergeant in the 9th Lancers. He was a very good horseman. And he used to look after... My father kept a lot of horses before the war, and he used to look after them.
But did he help generally with the farming?
Oh, yes, yes. He and I did it together. He'd been brought up on a farm in his youth, so he knew about farming, you see.
And so if the contractors did the planting of
yes,
the wheat,
yes.
And what were you doing after it had been...
Well, we got... We had to do a lot of drainage. You see, the farming prior to that, as you probably know, was at a very low ebb. And so the hedges and ditches had been got out of hand. And we had to do all the ditching and hedging, all by hand, of course it was.
With what kind of tools?
Well, spade and shovel and bill hooks. We didn't have any machinery in those days for that.
Clearing out ditches?
Clearing out ditches, yes. Did miles of ditching. And then it was hard work.
And what was the weather like in those couple of years?
I can't really remember, but I think it was fairly ordinary, even normal.
Did you get good wheat crops?
They were fairly average, I think. I can't remember now, but... And then I joined the army, you see. My father came back from the war. He came back after Dunkirk. He came back and was stationed in Northern Ireland for a bit and then came back and took over, and I joined the army.
What did he think of the state of the farm when he came back?
Oh, he wouldn't have said it was very good because he wasn't that sort of person.
Did he complain to you?
He's always complaining. Yes.
So he didn't think you'd done a good job?
Well, he didn't say so, put it that way.
Did you enjoy that couple of years?
Not very much, no. It was so hard, damned hard work, you never rested.
Did you do any damage to yourself?
No, didn't do any damage, but it was very interesting on joining the lifeguards. I was the only recruit, because we had the riding school, a pretty hard training for 6 months. I was the only recruit that put on weight. Gives you an idea.
And which units of the lifeguards were you in? Was it just the lifeguards?
I was in the lifeguards, but we were formed into what they called the composite regiment, I think it was called. It was lifeguards and horse guards mixed. And we were being trained to go to the Middle East, where the fighting regiment was. They were mounted out in the Middle East.
When you first joined the army, where did you do your initial training?
In Windsor and London. Some of the time we were in Windsor and Cumbermere Barracks, and in London Hyde Park.
And what was the initial training like?
It was very hard.
What did it consist of?
Well, we had square bashing, a riding school, PT, all gunnery, all that sort of thing.
And so at the end of it, you were
gymnastics,
a trooper?
Gymnastics, trooper, yes.
What about your fellow troopers? What was their background?
Well, basically, they were anybody who had had to do with horses, I suppose. A lot of them hadn't. They were just as long as you were the right height and promised to grow, you were allowed in.
What was your height?
I think I was 6'1" in those days. I think you had to be between 5'11" and 6'2", if I can remember rightly.
Not more than 6'2".
No, they frowned on you if you were more than 6'2". Isn't it extraordinary?
What kind of horses were they?
Big black horses. And also remounts, which were people's hunters and that sort of thing.
Why black?
Because the lifeguards always have black horses. Mostly black. The household cavalry, all black horses, except the band, who are grey.
Just for the sake of uniformity?
Well, it always has been that, yes.
And were you doing ceremonial duties?
Oh, no, there was nothing like that. We only wore khaki. We didn't have the ceremonial dress. We did the King's Guard and that sort of thing, but it was all in on foot. We didn't have horses on the King's Guard. We mounted on foot.
Where was the King's Guard mounted?
In Knightsbridge Barracks.
What happened on King's Guard?
Well, we, same as it does today, I suppose, but we also, during the night, had to get on the roof and watch out for the air raids.
You mean you just stood at a sentry box?
Yes, marched up and down, and same as they do. We weren't mounted, but we did it on foot, you see.
And we're talking about 1940?
1940, and I left them in, I think it was 42. No, 40, 41.
So this was during the Blitz?
Yes, that's right.
Well, what experience did you have of the Blitz?
Well, just, there were bombs dropped, all right, and we didn't have a direct hit on Knightsbridge Barracks, but roundabout was very bad. We used to go and help with the casualties and things like that, but we were basically training, you see. We didn't have much time to do any looking after the Blitz. It was, we were training.
You mean you were giving first aid to casualties?
Well, we were used to be help them with stretcher bearing in the in the evenings, perhaps all the afternoon, when we'd finished our parades, we'd go and help with the stretcher bearing.
Carrying people out of rubble?
Carrying people out of, off, backwards and forwards into ambulances, basically, I think it was, if I can remember rightly. No, no, we didn't get right into the Blitz part of it. You see, we were, we used to start, I think it was something like 5:45 in the morning which we, when we started, and we were hard at it training all day till about tea time, whatever time that was, and then evening stables, we'll call it, and then if necessary we'd go and help them with the Blitz.
What was even? What did you have to do during the evening stay?
Oh, well, we'd had looking after the horses, grooming them and cleaning them and that sort of thing. Feeding them.
And did any bombs actually fall near Knightsbridge Barracks?
Oh, I think so, yes. I think they fell everywhere. And the guns in the park went off the whole time.
Did you have any narrow escapes in the Blitz?
No. The only a bit of the bomb dropped near Cumbermere Barracks when I was on night guard, night stable guard, and I remember the shrapnel whizzled round and I leapt over the stable door, that's the closest I can remember, and ended up in the stable. That was quite amusing, but that was the nearest I think I got to being bombed.
What did public morale seem to be like in the Blitz?
I think it was pretty good, really. I mean, people were concerned of their business and livelihoods, but they had a terrible time.
Now, what happened to you after your spell in London?
During the time I was a trooper, our horses were taken away and we became motor battalion, which was an infantry job. And we used to do infantry training and marching. That would have been when the horses were taken away, because they dismounted the cavalry. During that period, I was put up for commission, and I went to the OCTU at Blackdown, just outside Aldershot, where I did 6 months training in the Armoured Corps.
What did that consist of?
Well, tank training. It was learning about tanks, learning how to become an officer, a certain amount of square bashing, wireless gunnery, drilling people, military law, all that sort of thing.
Which year are we talking about now, do you think?
Talking about, that would have been, let's see, my recollection is a bit hazy, but I went abroad in 42. It would have been, that would have been in April, I think, 42, and I would have been commissioned about 6 months, so I suppose the latter part of 41.
Any incidents that happened to you at Blackdown?
A very funny one at the end of the course. They lost my papers. The exam papers, at the end of the course, of course we had an exam, we had thorough exam papers, and they lost all recollection of my exam papers. And I said after the parade, when they were reading out who had done what, I said, you have left my name out. And they said, oh, you're not down here.
But you'd taken the papers.
Oh, yes, I'd done 6 months training and I'd done the thing. And so they said, they better give me a commission anyway. Which was slightly amusing, I thought. I did complain that I thought I might have got the Sword of Honour, but that didn't go down all too well.
And then?
Then I was commissioned into the Royal Armoured Corps and was posted to the Inniskillen Dragoons, where I stayed for a few months and then went on a draft of officers to India.
Is the full title the Royal Inniskillen Dragoon Guards?
Yeah, 5th Royal Inniskillen Dragoon Guards.
What was your period with them like?
It was a young officer just joined. It was fairly, wasn't frightfully interesting. I had basic jobs to do. I didn't have a troop or anything like that. And
where were you at the time?
I joined them in Northampton, and then we moved to Norfolk, where I left them. I wasn't with them more than a few months.
Did they make you welcome?
Oh, yes, yes.
Did you learn much of them?
I did, yes, yes, I learned a fair bit, because I hadn't been in the Armoured Corps very long. I'd been mounted and also with the Motor Battalion as infantry with the lifeguards. Of course, we had a very good training at Blackdown and went on from there.
And after the Inniskillings?
I went to India, where I was posted to a regiment, a wartime formed regiment, called the 26 Hussars. It was a regiment formed from the 14th, 20th Hussars, who were out in India at that time.
Any recollections of the voyage to India?
Yes, we took a long time. We left Gurok and sailed out nearly to America and then back round the Cape where we stopped in Durban. I was in Durban, I think, several months. And then on to India, Bombay.
Did you run into the enemy on the way?
I can't really remember. We weren't hit or anything like that, but I think the enormous convoy, I think they had a certain amount of trouble. We were always on submarine guard, but it was a ship called the Louis Pasteur, which was a new French ship, a liner rather, and it was fast, and so we able to get out of the way of submarines. So we were sent, I think us and one or two others were sent off on our own, more or less.
And what rank were you in this voyage?
I was second lieutenant, yes.
Were you comfortable on the voyage?
Very. Beautiful food, plenty to drink, very cheap. You've never... never had it so good. It was a very, very pleasant recollections of the voyage. It was a long time, but quite enjoyable.
And what were your first impressions on arrival in India?
Well, I suppose everybody's impressions of arriving in India is the filth. But apart from that, I don't think there was anything. Oh, there was the riots in Bombay at the time. There were some riots. I think the Muslims against the Hindus or something like that. But I did while I was in the transit camp in Bombay, I remember having to go out and help one of the Provo people to patrol around, make sure that the troops weren't in the brothels and that sort of thing. That was a rather sordid little interlude, but only for a couple of three nights.
These were military police?
Yes, a military police officer, yes. Somebody I'd known in Essex in peacetime, funnily enough. Nice chap, but they were people, the troops, if they found themselves in those areas of Bombay where they weren't allowed, very often ended up dead, you see. They were massacred.
Did you find any who were out of bounds?
I can't remember now. It was such a long time ago. I thought it was a pretty sordid job. We went round those cages where the women were sitting in the window. Awful, filthy. How on earth anybody went down? I don't. Disgusting. But
did you see anything of civil disturbances personally?
What, in India?
Yes.
Oh, we were. The whole time we were there, we were used to be called on aid to the Salt Power, which was, we used to have to occasionally go out and stop riots, or rather guard strategic points like post offices and those sort of things, telegraph offices. And
did you have to deal with mobs?
I can't remember the great mobs. I can't remember having ever dealt with a great mob, but we used to have these riots. They throw stones and shriek, and pretty low-key affairs they were.
Is this in Bombay?
Well, all over India, we were always called out. The army were often called out to help the police in riots. See, you had the Congress Party then, Gandhi, and usually he caused trouble.
Were there injuries amongst the troops from these affrays?
I don't think there were, but they certainly, the Gandhi Wallahs had every intention of causing disturbances amongst the troops, you know, injuring them, but we were pretty careful not to let it happen.
Did you feel safe or unsafe as you
went? Oh, quite safe, yes, quite safe. Yes.
What was the demeanour and attitude of Indian people towards you?
Well, the average Indian was very friendly. I mean, the Indians you met every day of the week, they were very, very friendly. I had great regard for them. But the Gandhi Wallahs were troublemakers, you see. Pro-Jap and that sort of thing. So you can imagine they were causing disruption. But you didn't come across them often. They weren't the normal run of the Indian people. No, we got on extremely well with the Indians. Great regard for them.
Now, you gave the impression that you were stationed, first of all, in Bombay.
No, I was in the transit camp in Bombay, and then I was sent to the 26th.